right, well.
Ready.
Okay, I'm going to open this meeting of the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness for Tuesday, April 28th. Today, we're going to have an informational meeting, and I emphasize informational meeting, so there's no rights nor wrong necessarily in this conversation we're going to have. And we've invited some people to some of the questions that the committee, as we're going through and talking about priorities, some of the questions have to do with fiscal statements and why they are what they are. I think we're going to start with that conversation to clarify that a little bit before we actually talk about the bills. I appreciate those members who did some work ahead of time and actually provided us a list of prioritization, but not all of us, including me, did that. But we'll. But that's a good place to start the conversation when we're talking about prioritization. But so maybe first we can talk. So the questions around fiscals had to do with two, just kind of basically, so how do we get to fiscals? What goes into those? Secondly, and members can correct me, one of the biggest questions we had around so many of these fiscals especially have to do with task force, the wide range, and what those fiscals estimates are. So that kind of goes back to, again, what makes up those fiscals, how are they made up, so we understand better. And that's those questions have come from, as it turns out, other committees also talked about the same thing. So first, we'd just like to have some conversation around the fiscals, what makes them up, why they're what they are, I guess. So.
So good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And I want to thank all of you for your hard work and policy and legislative efforts to date and for advocating for the resources to implement them and get tangible outcomes for our veterans and their families. We are roughly at that halfway point of the legislative session, and it sometimes becomes that lull before that final May 14th revenue forecast and the interplay between the policy committees and the Ways and Means budget committees. Wanted to start out quickly with just a quick highlight on our budget and then launch into the fiscal impact statements and analysis, and happy to take any questions. Overall, we are about a 92. Well, this is also for our proposed governor's recommended budget for 15-17, a $92 million total funds program, which sounds incredibly robust, but an incredible 71%, $65 million is for the Veterans Home, the Dallas and Lebanon, 16% Veterans Home Loan. And most of the policies that we see coming in front of this committee largely hinge off of the general fund and our work for veteran services. About $9 million today for this budget, but going forward, requesting $10.7 million in general fund for veteran services. Of that general fund, approximately half of it flows down to the counties and the national service organizations, with this part that remains with ODVA for statewide veteran services, funding our Salem and Portland Claims Office, conservatorship, and then also educational aid and emergency assistance grants. But important to note that all of that general fund resources largely goes into FTE for the agency. No S&S services and supplies associated with that. The only one that is a direct, that doesn't have the FTE component, is that educational aid and emergency assistance. And some real challenges that we see as an agency implementing on many of the policies and ideas that, whether from our own strategic framework or out of legislative ideas from this committee and others, without necessarily shifting those costs and those fiscal impacts onto our core business lines of the home loan program and the skilled nursing facilities. In terms of fiscal impacts statements, so out of all the hundreds of bills and legislative ideas, taking all of those, reading all of them, analyzing across our team what it would take, what it would require of us as a department, and then also discussing how we would frame out and implement that. But largely across our policy team, our HR team, and our financial team, trying to get that best sense of how we would implement on proposed legislative ideas and concepts. When I was in the Marines, I was a logistics officer, and always when we would tell our commanding officer on any idea that they had come down the pike in strategy or tactics to implement, we can do anything, but we can't do everything. So it comes down to prioritizing and focus, which is why we appreciate you digging in from this policy side and prioritizing here today. In that vein of we can do anything, but we can't do everything, I think ODVA and our agency has had a bias in the past to doing zero fiscals. And there's always, I think, a perception, whether from agencies or legislators or stakeholders or policy advisors in the governor's office, whether there is gamesmanship around the fiscal analysis and the impact fiscal statements. Historically, I feel like most veterans legislation that we have proposed or the legislature has proposed, historically, there's been a significant bias, I think, to having that zero fiscal to simply avoid going to a ways and means route and making sure that we could speed track some of the legislation. Now, there are many concepts that can be absorbed out of Hyde across the agencies and across our own, but many that also have fiscal impacts. And just one example from the past, I don't know what year it was, but when we did the DMV and DHS information and data share, when you read the straight bill, capturing there was a fiscal on DMV's end to send that data to us in terms of identifying more veterans, volunteering their information and sending that information to ODVA to work for outreach. There wasn't a cost necessarily for the agency to catch that data and put it into an Excel. But where we have seen 3,000 odd contacts come our way from DMV every month, no cost for us just to sit on all of that information, but significant costs when we're turning around and sending out benefit magazines, printing those, mailing out the postage costs, the costs with the mail house, and then the information that is flowing back from veterans, making sure that we're capturing that, whether it's an email or phone calls. And I would highlight, so that was one of a similar bill this session, House Bill 2230, in terms of modeling what we've done with DMV and DHS. Representative Nathanson wanted to try to model the same type of effort across the Oregon Health Authority. So again, constituents and citizens that would be engaging with that agency, volunteering their information that they served in the military or were a veteran, and can they share that information with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs for follow-on outreach. Again, so this time around, there's a fiscal cost from Oregon Health Authority to capture that data and the technology upgrades to send it to us. But on our end, instead of just putting a zero fiscal, knowing that we are going to want to do the legislative intent behind that is to do more outreach and to drive more veteran engagement, to try to capture what we estimate will be another 3,000 contacts coming our way, and making sure that we account for those costs and don't simply put those onto the loan program or our other business lines. Another one that I would highlight, and I think it kind of gets to the staffing component of some of the fiscal impacts, Representative Peluso brought forward a concept wanting to better serve our women veterans, a very discreet, somewhat of a small package of simply putting one veteran coordinator, a women's veterans coordinator, to begin doing better outreach and support to one of the largest, fastest growing demographics in our veterans population. But somewhat some sticker shock on our, and I believe some of these are indeterminate and not fully fiscals from LFO. So I don't know if it's an unofficial estimate. We had roughly $250,000 fiscal impact statement on that one very small targeted position. And when you break out staffing, one cost is that salary. First, we need to remember that they are biennial costs, so always looking at two-year budgets. The FTE is usually about 60% of those costs, but significant benefits cost roughly 40%. And then you always have to look at that services and supplies. For a normal position, you're going to have very small and targeted services and supplies in terms of a computer, a desk, a workstation, any small supports that they need. Where you get statewide impacts, you do begin to get much larger services and supplies impacts in terms of, so within this, it's not just simply the cost of that salary position, which is about $150,000, but looking at how do we pull together two annual conferences for women veterans to be able to convene on that outreach? How do we develop marketing materials and send those out to our women veterans? So additional costs to capture, but those staffing ones are significant and do drive much of the work. In terms of some of the questions on task forces and reports are often a fallback in terms of some of the legislative efforts. And I think we can often absorb those costs agency by agency on our existing resources. Some of the concerns are not knowing necessarily how many task forces will go through and how many that will be called to support. Always some differences across agencies in terms of how much they have in terms of policy resources to be able to put to that. But also looking at the scale and the outcomes that we're looking from these task forces or from these reports. Do we want to provide reimbursements for the members that are asked to participate? Do we want to get outside of the Valley and outside of Salem and have those travel costs accounted for? And what kind of reports do we want to have generated? If it's simply off of our ODVA staff, it can be a much more minimized and targeted fiscal. But if we're looking for a more professional report, how do we contract for that? And how do we also capture the facilitation and or staffing costs of the task forces? Happy to go through any of the individual bills. Many of them, where there is uncertainty, there are sometimes indeterminate fiscals and much more work to come. But we're happy as an agency not wanting to view fiscals as a roadblock to good work for veterans and their families, but also wanting to accurately capture what some of those costs are. And in terms of that give and take, Representative Evans had House Bill 2838, originally looking to stand up an incarcerated veterans outreach program. When we first began as an agency to dig in on that, you know, to read the legislative language, we had looked at possibly having one court, you know, a veterans reentry, incarcerated veterans reentry coordinator spot, almost similar to the women's veterans concept, and then trying to leverage the County Veterans Service Office network. In the give and take of what the legislative intent was, plus that up to a more robust model, in terms of having a manager and four coordinators, to have that be more statewide driven work, vice leveraging the counties. And then also now rebooting in terms of what does it look like to implement and get good recommendations out of a task force. So happy to go through any of the individual bills, but also a willingness to work with you all on any amendments going forward.
Okay. Questions that people have of any of these? Sure, go ahead.
So a couple. Thank you, Cameron. So all jokes aside about Paul being the representative from the task force district is when we look at these, do you see a place where we might be able to combine? Because a lot of the players are going to be the same. You're going to assign quite a few of the same players from your agency to sit on these task force and participate. Is there a place where we can get some economies of scale in the fiscals if we are sort of mashing the work together and things that maybe have some nexus? And that might not be a question you can answer today, but as we are going through this process, it would be helpful to know where can we find sort of that nexus of work where you're going to sort of assign the same people, and I'm hoping Paul Evans gets tasked to all these task force, and he can participate, or somebody, you know, from one of these committees is going to participate, so that we can consolidate some of the work. I think individually they're important ideas, but I think there's a lot, when I go to veterans meetings, like the one we were just at this weekend, there's a lot of overlap of conversation at those types of things. So I think that there's probably going to be room to do some of that. So that's one of the things I would like to see, is that the work gets done, but maybe we can consolidate the work under sort of a smaller fiscal umbrella and merge some concepts. And one example of that in the list of sort of bills we're considering today, there's 13, and I just went through and did my homework late and, you know, made some notes on them. But one I would put in the 13th priority, House Bill 2539, not because I don't think we need to submit a report on medical services, but if that's $87,000 and some change, and we're going to try to create a women's veterans coordinator, I see us being able to task that position if we can create it immediately with this work without a bill, and save that $87,000. So where we can find some nexus on doing that work, that might be able to, if we're going to create a position, maybe the first thing out the door she does as part of that work, or whoever's going to be hired to do that job, is go chase this information for us and let's consolidate those numbers, because the request For the staff position is $278,000, and I'd like to be able to make sure we can fill that. And if that means we forego 2539, even though it's important, let's wrap that into her scope of duty or that person's scope of duty right from the get-go so that we can get the information back just as the bill would have otherwise prescribed. So when I went through and ranked them, that's why you see that as 13th. It's not because I don't think the work's important, but because of the prioritization of the position, I think it's, for me, is personally higher, but I think we can get that done in the scope of work of the new employee if we actually get to hire that person. I would rather hire the person and then task them just administratively through you to do the work. Does that make sense? That was a really roundabout description.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, Representative Parrish, I think many of the stakeholders and players in these discussions are going to be the same folks, whether it's across housing or incarcerated veterans. Our efforts for women veterans, disabled veterans through the Preferred Working Worker Program. And the time may be right. And many of the strategies that I think we would develop in the budget, the policies and the budget's recommendations to come out of that often would be the very similar efforts. And I think the time, so we have dug in as an agency across our strategic framework. We've had the opportunity also to have that Secretary of State outside external performance audit and review. The time may be right for a broader task force that does leverage some of these, you could combine some of them, depending on the will of the committee, to take a broader look at what are some very underserved populations, whether women veterans, incarcerated veterans, disabled veterans, to see what are those broader strategies that we could address.
Sure. So for another bill that came back this year, different story, but that in 2013 we were, ended up being tasked to go out and talk about inclusionary zoning. What we came back with was about 40 other things that we identified were problems, but we did it in the scope of that one universe of meeting and bringing all the stakeholders. I guess I just see there's an opportunity, whether we have to go get a bill from the from the speaker to take some of these task force bills and wrap them into an sort of an omnibus, you know, task force that we're going to deal with these issues over maybe the course of a little bit longer reporting back to the legislature time period, so that it's one set of fiscal, it's one set of work, it's one set of players who then gets to sort of continuously know what the discussion is to come back and not have like 15 different reports to the legislature from all these task force, but one person or even two of us who can come back and really articulate what did we solve in that, if we got to write a blank check for all the universe of problems, what are the things we're bringing back to the legislature then that actually need a policy piece, and was there room even in the original concepts that got turned into task force to do some of that consolidation? And I think going forward, that would be my preference, would be to run a bill out of rules based on mashing of these concepts to get to one fiscal, so that we have an omnibus task force that has, including but not limited to, we're going to deal with these issues of the ones that are defined. That we also, that way we also don't get a bunch of reporting back.
Sure. Representative Boone, did you have a
question? Yeah, I have a. I just have a question on the first one, 2230. Why it is $600,000 to just note for Oregon Health Authority to notify you guys.
How much about the DMV?
Sure.
What? No, seriously. I'm sorry to interrupt, but how much was the DMV fiscal when we did that in a previous session? I do not remember that being a $600,000 fiscal when ODOT came in and said they were going to do no. Because basically, and I prioritized 2230 as no wrong door. I put that as my first one. The fiscal from ODOT to do the same work that we're asking OHA to do was not $600,000. So I'm assuming this fiscal came from OHA's direction and not from the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Chair Lively, Representative Boone, Representative Parrish. So the technology side of making their system work to capture that data, it's not currently data they collect from OHA's side across their two benefit programs. To capture that, they would need to reboot their systems, and it was about half of that fiscal cost. The one that we submitted from ODVA was, what do we want to then do with that information in terms of outreach? Certainly could have a zero fiscal on our end if we simply are catching that data and not generating benefit magazines and outreach and follow-up. Our intent was to still try to do that, but not leverage the home loan program. And I would say there is having been on the side of policy advisor and on the side of agency director, I know the IT systems are not always as friendly as they could be. If you asked us at any given time to do different IT initiatives in terms of messing with our databases, there would be significant costs to those efforts, not because we didn't want to better serve veterans, but the reality of some antiquated systems.
Can I follow up?
Sure.
So what I was wondering about is what exactly is that information? You said there were two portals or whatever that come from those. So is it all automated, or what is it? What's it for that they would be asking?
Chair Lively, Representative Boone, the question that we're trying to get is, have you or a loved one ever served in the military? Mm-hmm. Are you a veteran? Would you be comfortable having that information shared with ODVA to for future follow-up?
So it's just a check.
Correct. Okay. But what is often feels like a check, whether it was for the license, going through the license, just getting a check on the box to be able to get veterans designation, from a technology side, it can sometimes be cumbersome agency by agency.
And just a final. Sure. So it's OHA, it's a health authority, and I guess I'm not clear when, are they doing something directly with these people? In what capacity are they?
Benefits.
So I've, Chair Lively,
so
Representative Boone, finally found my paperwork here. Similar to when DMV was interacting with citizens at the counter, or DHS was caseworkers were interacting with workers, in terms of citizens that are part of the Oregon Education's Benefit Board or the Public Employees Benefits Board, in terms of the status of that membership, a large segment of folks to tap into to find out their veteran status across those two. Other ones that I think could be added in are the Oregon Health Plan or other programs where they have direct citizen engagement to try to capture that veteran status information.
Yeah. Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair. Couple things. On the task force, I was associated with the 2008 task force, which was largely at a hide. We didn't give reimbursements to any of the members, et cetera, et cetera. But I know that the agency doesn't have the capacity to do a lot of that at a hide. To the issue of the task force combining them, I'm open to those kinds of changes to some of the bills I put forward. Having said that, on the housing one specifically, there are two or three different models that I'm hoping to be able to come back with a recommendation after having those conversations. So if it does get turned into a larger task force, I would just want to make sure that we don't lose the intent of the
bills.
The original. Bills.
Sure. And that's why I suggested including but not limited to, because then other things could come up out of that.
Sure.
But we take all of those things that are task force in a bill. As you draft it, you would say, we're going to do this specific line item and this, and like actually break it down. We, by header, we know sort of the underlying bills. We could even reference the bills in a new bill and say, as it, you know, speaks to any of these, we're going to get these topics done, so that we come back with all the information I think you're looking for.
So before we move too far into that, and I appreciate that conversation, I just want to make sure if there's other questions about fiscals or that. Well, again, that's not our primary topic. I mean, as we looked at these, we know there's substantial costs involved, and that's part of why we're going to prioritize. Representative Peluso.
Thanks, Chair Lively. Again, just as a rookie on all this, I am guessing that none of these numbers are set in stone.
No.
Thank you. So I even think, again, on my women's vet bill that I am very, very much want to have happen, there would be opportunities to look at an actual budget and see where we could distribute funding. So there, again, what we have is, again, an estimate, as it says, but we also then will have some flexibility to trim that if we need.
And Chair Lively, members of the committee, Representative Peluso, ultimately it is the legislature's determination of how to disperse those funds to implement the work. By no means over the barrel in terms of how we have proposed to implement that work to finance it.
Thank you.
And so does that conversation, so these have gone to Ways and Means, so I'm just trying to understand a little bit again the policy. So in Ways and Means, to look at this, so is that conversation, because some of that may have to do with the policy, how far we go or don't go, and some has to do with just how you implement the policy. So does that conversation take place at the level of Ways and Means before the bill is recommended out, or how does that conversation take place Because we started the conversation at the policy level, and I think we're pretty clear on what we wanted. And so right now, we have an estimate of what it would cost to take forward that policy. So if we're going to have, if somebody's going to have a conversation about changing the fiscal, then does that conversation include changing the policy or the impacts that might have on the policy, whether it can be fully implemented or not?
Chair Lively, members of the committee, I think a potentially a better question for Legislative Fiscal Office in terms of amending or on some of these that are still, it's a still an indeterminate fiscal on the Women's Veterans one, still to come in terms of more analysis. But much of, you know, depending on whether it goes to a subcommittee on Ways and Means for further discussion and further analysis, or whether to the full Ways and Means as well.
What about indeterminate fiscals?
Chair Lively, members of the committee, so, you know, an indeterminate fiscal to simply get the fiscal, that there is some fiscal,
right,
to move it from this committee to the next level to make sure from the first kind of move it out of the first chamber of work and meet those deadlines to still have further analysis and further clarity where there's still questions on how to implement it.
Okay. Any other questions or clarifications on that? Okay. Thanks a lot for your input. That doesn't mean we won't have other questions, but
don't go too far.
And Chair Lively, members of the committee, I like the brainstorm potentially of a more overarching task force approach. I think the time is right. We are what we saw grow out of those 2008-2009 task forces often did not get every answer under the sun, raised a number of issues to be implemented, whether from a policy standpoint, from a partnership standpoint, from a legislative standpoint, but also then spawned other more specific task forces down the line on more in-depth review across women, veterans, health, was it women, veterans, and healthcare, or specific, just so two separate ones, one overall on women's veterans, one overall on healthcare, another one on transportation. I think we could find a way, whether taking one of these bills or just looking at simply a budget note. This is not work that the agency runs from in terms of trying to engage the stakeholders, but trying to do it in a coordinated way that doesn't overburden limited staff would be a huge step forward. And to still call out, these are the questions we want answered in terms of specifics on housing or specific on incarcerated veterans, could be a huge step forward. And then time it out so that we can, before the next big session, have a whole list of options going forward.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So I really am, I like where we're going with sort of this prioritization, because we just know this is an area of the budget where we get short shrifted. I mean, let's just be honest. So if we're going to have to go and like try to be as creative and sharpen our pencil, I think this might, as we sit down and mash this out, I think we also probably should give this over to the Senate, because they're sending us a bunch of bills that they've got priorities. Mm-hmm. We're just prioritizing House stuff, but I think we should maybe rope that in and also take that sort of consolidating eye of what's an omnibus task force or anything look like with anything they're sending us. And I don't know exactly everything they're sending us yet, but I think we should start using that for the rest of this session as sort of a lens that we're looking through, going, where are there synergies with their bills, so that we can get to something really robust out of the small little chunk of money we're going to get to do this work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree with Representative Parrish, because one of my top bills, top priorities, is a Senate bill, and it's over or down in, over down there.
It's over down there.
Over down there. I think we always say down in Ways and Means. It, we are down.
Okay. So thank you, and we'll see where this goes. So let's talk a little bit about priorities. And I appreciate the conversation about the task force. And I, again, as I've said before, we can pursue anything we want to pursue to try to see if there's a way. And I appreciate, Representative Parrish, what that way may be if we get to the point that it looks like to combine them. But I'm certainly willing to ask those questions. And if we have to use an existing bill and somehow we can do it to this in Ways and Means, I think we need to ask those questions. But above task force, we have another substantial number of bills here. And again, I want to have a conversation, the prioritization conversation, first and foremost, to be on the policy and how important that policy is. Well, I appreciate there's, again, there's a fiscal attached to it. I just want to make sure that when we're prioritizing, we prioritize first based on policy, what the policy is and what we think the importance of that impact results will be. And then after we've done that, we can have the conversation. So based on, these are our three highest policy bills that we think are the most important. And then if we need to go further than that from a standpoint of 1, 2, 3, we feel some compunction to say this is absolutely number one, regardless, then we should say that. Representative.
So on this bill, or this list of bills had gone to revenue, I don't understand some of these further analysis required. Who
so we want to start with revenue.
Oh.
No, that's all right.
It's
a smaller amount. So it just depends on how we want to chunk this stuff. I know we have...
I was just asking the question of where that comes from, the further analysis required.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, I could probably speak to the one that I have. I mean, so the bill that I have that's in revenue, for example, since we're talking about further analysis required, we don't know how many people would be claiming a deduction, for example, for spousal benefits. We know that there are 22,000 people in the state of Oregon that get a 1099-R connected to the Department of Defense, but those could be active retirees, like actually, you know, a veteran. But we don't really have a way to sort of extrapolate how many of these would be a 1099-R to a veteran who is deceased and their spouse takes the, you know, sort of the shortened benefit that we described when we heard the bill. That might only be 2,000 people. There's sort of that's we don't know. So somebody smarter than me on the budget stuff is going to have to give that a guesstimate based on we know there's at least a population of 22,000 people with a 1099.
Yeah, the numbers is from a revenue standpoint. Most of the, I mean, they're trying to understand what quote the revenue, the potential revenue impact is. Now it's not as clear on your. Bill, we've had that conversation since it's a checkoff.
I wonder why. I wonder why. I understand that they still, any bill that has to do with revenue. Or taxes or anything goes to that committee, but I don't understand because nobody can know what, and it doesn't matter. It's money that is the person's money, the taxpayer's money. They decide to keep it or they decide to assign it to an advocacy group. And so it has no bearing on the state once whatsoever in or money in or out. So I don't understand why it has to have further analysis because that's kind of the way it is. Or is that just a way to say it? It's going to die.
I'm
a little paranoid.
Yes, you are.
Yours should really have no. I mean, other than
it has no revenue, no fiscal.
You got to print new 1040 forms every year anyway.
No, it does. It's all online. They just add a line
when they do their taxes.
No. Mm-hmm. If you're doing your taxes, you're doing it electronically. Mm-hmm. This group just gets added to a long list
of
120 different groups.
If you're filing your taxes online. But otherwise, you're printing it on a new 1040 form. But every year, we print new 1040 forms.
So
add a line.
I don't think we're going to write it in. Since I wasn't around when this started, the checkoff, I remember the conversation we had before we could move it to revenue about the history of the checkoff and how many there were and what the criteria was to start with for them to checkoff versus this change. And you provided good proof that was no longer the case.
Hard, fast
proof. Yes, it was. And so after that, I'm still not clear. But again, from my standpoint, so the ones in revenue in particular will prioritize, but if indeed this committee feels strong that it has nothing to do with, we ought to make that argument and send it down there to let that committee know that based on all of our look at it, and if it is doing just checkup, we're not arguing about what the policy was or wasn't in the past. All we're talking about today, this makes sense, we think it makes sense, and it doesn't have a revenue impact.
It's an easy action for them, I would imagine.
Seems like it.
They just look at
we can
it.
Make that argument as a group just to see if we can move it. So, ups into that one.
Chair Lively, first, I agree. There are some bills that seem to defy the rules, and that one, to me, is one of those.
Yeah.
The second thing is, just in terms of the way I approach the prioritization process on policy, my first cut was anything that would get veterans jobs or leverage federal dollars that are going into jobs. So that's why, for me, my first tax on the tax credit side would be the tax credit for hiring veterans. On the other list, it would be the bridge loan program with a close second for the women veterans coordinator, something that the agency's been looking at for a number of years and I think we need to do. But my first kind of category of policy was workforce and getting, again, leveraging federal dollars that are out there. My second piece was focusing on the, as Director Smith just said, the most rapidly expanding part of the veterans experience, which is the women veterans piece. Everything beyond that is very negotiable from my perspective.
Okay, that's reasonable approach.
Okay, well, then if we're going down that line, I prioritize mine based on a couple things. One, are we stabilizing people where they live? So would that, like, for on the revenue side, survivor benefit is a piece of that when you've got people who are very low income, to make sure that we are stabilizing folks as they make those transitions of losing a spouse. But then also stabilizing for me is also jobs. So I've also prioritized, sort of one and two, where the tax credit for the hiring a veteran and the survivor benefits sort of ranked up there. And then on the policy side, for me, stabilizing people is finding the veterans and helping them through the process. So I did prioritize the, as my sort of number one on that mix, the no wrong door piece out of OHA. There's a huge population of people that are, I think, improperly aligned with DHS benefits, particularly when we should be making sure that they are getting VA benefits that they have earned first. And we know in Washington state, it is saving them millions of dollars to their general fund annually to be moving people from DHS programs over to VA programs, making sure they're held harmless in that sort of long wait process to get actually connected with VA health care or disability pay, and suddenly have some disability, you know, dollars in your pocket if they were earned, and maybe you don't need TANF or food stamps or some of those other programs that the state is picking up the tab on that. So for me, when you look at OHA doing no wrong door and the prioritization of, you know, moving people into veterans, there is that, while $599,000, you know, in other committees, folks, this doesn't make people even blink. We're sitting here gasping over $600,000 fiscal, but the realized potential for savings once we start, you know, in two biennia from now, when you found, you know, say 20,000 veterans through of the 775,000 Oregonians on food stamps, we've identified, say, 20,000 veterans, And you suddenly are moving them out of those DHS programs, it is saving our general fund potentially millions. So for me, that is a huge stabilization effort, both for our budget and for the veteran. And then I've also, the very second one then was, okay, now that we find these people, let's get them a darn job. So, you know, I'm pretty close with Representative Evans on here about stabilization and, you know, making sure people have a paycheck.
Important. Okay. I have a question for you. Please. So, this one that we received, it has, I assume that
orange.
Color is orange. Who does that belong to?
Representative Caluso.
Okay, that's Representative Caluso. And we have one from Representative Esquivel.
Yep.
Do we not?
Yep.
It was the first one that was on the dais.
It's the one with the stars
it's
on
the one with the blue numbers and stars, yeah. And he's changed his mind several times.
I don't have a copy.
Looks that. Like this, Chair. Can you give me
the only one we don't have anything from is Huffman.
Yeah. And so.
You don't turn one in, you don't get a say.
Okay. Very good. I'm just trying to keep track of what we're doing.
Oh, and it does look like Esquivel, or somebody did this. Was this you, Deb, or is this?
That's mine. Yeah.
Okay, that's Deb.
And the only thing, I had a brief conversation with Representative Huffman, and part. Obviously, we at one point said cancel this meeting and reschedule it, so some people had scheduled something for this
right.
day, so I apologize for the start and the stop. What he did indicate to me from his perspective, and he, since he's on Ways and Means, he's kind of in an interesting position mm-hmm. on this committee, but he made a pretty strong thing that the bonding ought to be, I mean, because of all the federal money available there, we ought to make pretty clear that that's a priority, a very high priority, so that it doesn't get lost in this other conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes great sense of that, because we've heard the reason why the federal money is there. So it's one of those programs. And the speaker did ask at one of our meetings what other bonding they're asking for, and we provided that information. But I think that was his one of his big concerns, that that one doesn't get lost just because it's a bonding one.
3463.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Chair Lively, Representative Clem and I have both talked to Representative Buckley specifically about the that not a policy specific but an area specific
right.
type of activity.
Yeah.
So that conversation, I think it's good that this committee emphasizes
it. Emphasize that too.
But we are pushing that as well.
I figured that. Okay. So sorry to distract us. So Representative Puso, you want to make some comments about where you're at. And
you bet. You bet. So on the revenue side, my two priorities were the Firefighters Association things, both the add the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association to the list of entities eligible for individual income tax return checkoff contribution, and House Bill 3189, grant income tax credit for service to fire departments or rural fire protection, where I was on the revenue side. And then, of course, for me, the Women's Vet Coordinator position is number one. Prior to Representative Parrish saying it, it's been on my notes for quite some time when this came out, to try and merge the report on the services used by female veterans into that bill.
Okay.
I'll go. Yeah, I agree with Palooza on merging those two. I had that note on mine. My actual number one will be Senate Bill 808, which is in Ways and Means, and that's the Oregon Resilience Plan Part 2 with the task force that will do the human side of things. And number one on this list would be creating Office of State Resilience Officer. And then my two is the creating Women's Veteran Coordinator and joining it with the report. And maybe that could be the first task of that person. And I kind of separated these out into emergency prep and veterans. And then my number three is the another emergency prep side, DLCD to create guidelines, best practices, model plan provisions. Yesterday I was in Manzanita for the annual meeting, the 7th or 8th annual meeting of the Nehalem CERT group that's really miles ahead of a lot of people in planning, et cetera. And they were commenting on they're getting a lot of interest in their program from other places, and so it'd be nice to have something that was the same story that we can give to people and say, this is a plan, this is how it works, and that it would be a scientific plan, this is why we have that, and recommendations for any building code provisions, et cetera. And then I move in, I got the bonds and the Korean vets, taking care of them as promised. And I mean, it goes down from there, not that anything's, I think they're all good and we should get them all.
So, but Representative Boone brings up an interesting point. Maybe we should, rather than prioritizing against resiliency and veterans, separate the two out so that we make it clear in either one of those categories what the high, because as I, you were talking about
idea.
That,
yeah,
I was just thinking that isn't really fair.
Them.
They are different,
yeah.
And there's some priorities that might be different. So we probably should try, when we come up with our final list, to separate those and do it that way versus...
Makes sense.
Because I was thinking the same thing when I was reading it. I was thinking, well, this is a little hard when we're
hard
weighing
when
one against the other, because there's certainly priorities in both.
Okay.
So if people agree with that, we'll, when we finalize, that's what, kind of where we'll be. Representative Huffman, I tried to express our brief conversation we had, at least regarding the bonds and the importance the bonds would be. But if you have other, we've been talking generally about the policy at this level, what our priorities are from the impact of the policies. Do you have some thoughts or...
Well, as I was working down through the list, what really struck me, as we've talked before, are the fiscals. Some of these, I just came from Senate Veterans, and we were first bill up was Representative Nathanson's 2230 that has an enormous fiscal on it that would require Oregon Health Authority to make the referral, to ask and then make the referral for veterans. And I mean, it's $599 collectively for the things that they say they would have to do. And you just go down through the list from there, you've got Representative Parrish's for the Korean veterans, and you're going, holy cow, how can so that to me was hard to even get out of the gate. It was so staggering. But
so,
having said that, like you and I talked, we almost kind of have to separate it. Mm-hmm. The $5 million for headquarters has to come first. It's a timing thing. federal money's there, the appropriation, we've got to do the state match. So
I'm confused. So House Bill 2230, that's, where is that at that you were just... So that
was
just
well, interestingly, I didn't know it was going to be, it was in Senate Veterans.
Really?
And I'm not sure why, because it went referred to Ways and Means. I guess maybe Senator Boquist requested it because maybe he wants to apply some pressure and get some answers along with Representative Nathanson and myself. So,
we'll see.
Yes, so interesting.
What did he say? What did I miss?
Chair Lively.
What did he say?
Well,
which time reference?
you just said.
Chair Lively.
Yes. You.
Upon occasion, chairs can borrow bills. And I believe that the Senator Boquist was borrowing the bill for the day.
Thank you.
For a conversation.
Yes, sir. He can't act on it officially.
He can't act on it because it's still in Ways and Means.
But they can have a public hearing on it.
Okay. Well, we're learning as we go, aren't we?
Yeah.
So other...
But can I say something?
Sure, go right
ahead. This is the first time I've been here as a representative for a long time, but this is the first time... Even in my time as an LA and watching committees, that I've ever seen people actually do it like this in a policy committee.
Should be doing it like this.
Yeah, for bills that we send down to Ways and Means. And it seems like with what we ask them, we always just kind of bombard our Ways and Means buddies with a list, basically, and said, here's my wish list, and do it or die, you know, that kind of thing. And this is really a great process to get it prioritized and have a reason why and have it vetted at this level, because you know people always say it's just a few people who make these decisions, and actually one, because you have the gavel. But I'm just really glad we're doing it this way. I think that was a brilliant idea on your part.
It didn't come from me. It came from the speaker. We were talking her and I were talking about, she asked me the question regarding some of the bills and about priorities. And I said, we sent them all down. And she said, well, what do you think about the committee having this conversation? I said, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
It'll be up to the committee. And so when we had that conversation, and the advantage we have in this committee is we have fewer bills. So we have some time to take a look at that versus where some are just being bombarded and they're coming so many. But that doesn't mean in the future, when we have these conversations, we shouldn't have more. I think that's what policy committees, I think that's what we're here for, is not only just the policy, but kind of the priorities. So so here's what I'm going to suggest. So most people have submitted their kind of the list. I'm going to combine those lists and provide that to you from a standpoint of just where things are right now. Divide them up by resiliency and veterans, and also then we'll put from my standpoint, we'll just put the bonds there by themselves, given what the bonds are, and see where those kind of fall out. And then you, between now and Thursday, can provide if you have other information that you want to provide. But I'll get that to you. We'll get that to you right away, so you have that to look at it. And then we can kind of, on Thursday, hopefully finalize the list. So the intent will be, and it doesn't necessarily have to be 1, 2, 3, but the intent will be priorities from the standpoint and the argument why that should be. And I appreciate the conversation about task force, and so we can see if we can craft some language around how we might take the time to do that. Again, I'm not sure from a process standpoint, these are in Ways and Means and how much time we have to try to. So the suggestion is we might, since we've got multiple task force, see if there's a way to combine and have one that's addressing multiple issues and versus all these separate ones, so that the cost is just the cost. And so I'm not sure from a Ways and Means process how long they can wait for us to try to have done that. Because we'll have to amend it in Ways and Means, would we not?
Well, some of the timelines were about 2 weeks away from the May revenue forecast, I believe. And so that's
that's
the big thing we're all waiting on.
Yeah,
but we should be ready.
We should be ready. That's right.
If I could,
sure, go ahead.
Jump in just to, and I agree with Rep. Boone that this is a great process, and I really appreciate the speaker getting with you and doing it, because it gives the committee a little more of a voice on priorities, looking at the work we've done in the last few months. But I want to just remind individuals of the bills that. If I had a bill on this list, I would be in touch with Tim Inman, the speaker. You probably see me frequently sitting back at Rep. Buckley's desk. I'm working back there, because bills get there are so many bills that get sent to the past midpoint of session.
Yeah.
So if you've got bills in revenue or rules right now or ways and means, any of those three, you know, it takes personal advocacy in explaining. Well, I went to Rep. Barnhart today on the floor. I've got a bill in revenue tomorrow, and explain to him what the bill does. There's absolutely no opposition. Everybody's going to be in the room singing Kumbaya. And, you know, that's what he wants to hear right now, is that he's not going to be hearing a bill that was sent to him from a policy committee and that he's going to have to referee.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things that leaders along the way and co-chairs of committees and whatnot, subcommittees, want to hear, that if they agree to hear a bill that was sent to them, that it's going to be doable.
Sure.
Because they've got so many, they've only got time to hear the stuff that really has a chance of moving.
Yeah. And I appreciate those comments, and I'm by no way not suggesting that you don't individually. I think that, you know, it works both ways. And so this, the intent here is just hopefully to reinforce some of that too.
Right. But
Representative, did you have a question?
No, I was agreeing.
Oh, okay. Anything, any other questions, any other information we need? Other than the Senate bills, but we'll...
Yeah, and I think we'll start getting them.
Yeah.
So I want, can I just say something? I wanted to thank everybody for supporting Senate Bill 85. We actually got an article in Oregonian about it.
That's right.
And when I spoke to this group in Manzanita, they're from just the area down there, but a lot of them have homes in the area from somewhere else, and they'd started hearing about it. And the highlight of it was, we had read in the Oregonian article that Walt Pellet was the guy who has a big store with a lot of you know, gear that he moves in and out quickly.
City Liquidators,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And apparently it's an older building, and he was very excited to hear about this, you know, opportunity to have a public-private partnership for financing for seismic upgrades, because think of if that building went, I can only imagine what it, you know, all the things in it. I mean, it's got to be huge, because it sounds like a big warehousey type building. So.
Yep, 10, 12 stories.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, so really super big. Well, so no fault Walt. Somebody called him no fault Walt.
No fault Walt.
No fault Walt. I said, what a great ally.
It is full.
Yeah, that's great. So anyway, thank you all for your support on that, too. That came to us from, actually, they got it wrong. It wasn't the Portland Development Commission. It was the City of Portland.
City of Portland. Right. It was the City of Portland.
And when I mentioned Elizabeth's name, people knew her. So she's famous. The boys in Kiev out there, and now you know.
Okay, anything else for today? Okay, so we'll get you some information.
And you kept copies, or do you need...
Yeah.
Do you have those? Okay.
I got them. So, yeah.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. If not, anything else to come before the committee?
Sure.
Anything else?
No, sir.
Okay. We don't want to introduce a bunch of new bills or anything? Okay.
So I wanted to tell you what diversity I have. I may have a little bit of a pickle. I wanted to tell you what diversity I have.